Shopping as we know it is changing fast. Big box stores are vanishing. Amazon is going bricks and mortar. What does it all mean for the health of our local economy? This is Florida Matters.
Support for Florida Matters comes from the Hospitals of BayCare Health System, providing more than 100 health seminars, classes, and events each month. BayCare's mission is to build a healthier Tampa Bay. Register for a complimentary health seminar, class, or event at baycareevents.org.
From the Donna Studio at WUSF Public Media, I'm Robin Sessingham. Maybe that mall where you spent a lot of time as a teenager now looks like a ghost town, or the big box chain store that killed your favorite little independent bookstore now has itself been overtaken by an online retailer. Retail is changing, and there will be winners and losers here in Tampa Bay. Ashley Gerbel-Kreitzer is a senior reporter with the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Ashley, 11 Toys R Us will be closing in the area, ranging from 20,000 to 50,000 square feet. That's a lot of empty space. Is that going to be a good thing or a bad thing for retail locally?
Well, here in Tampa Bay, it's actually a pretty good thing when you look at how little retail development we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years, really since the last boom, since the last big boom when they built a lot of the big box retail, the Home Depots, the Target-anchored power centers. We haven't seen that in more than a decade. So having these empty Toys R Us, a lot of them are very well located, so that'll give some of the retailers that are still in brick-and-mortar growth mode an opportunity to come back into the market.
Good. All right. Dave Orton now is a marketing professor at USF's MUMA College of Business. Are new retailers still going for these great big spaces, these big box spaces? Are they still viable?
Yes and no. There's always room for box stores, but the real question comes down to who are the customers? And if you think about it, there's a changing landscape of customers. The Generation X, or the parents of millennials, they were the consumer group that started to leave box stores to go to online purchasing. Generation Y, or the millennials now, are basically online purchasers. Amazon has been a big pusher of box stores having problems right now because the majority like to purchase online and free shipping, and box stores are finding it very difficult to compete with that.
Okay. Also in the studio with us, Paul Rutledge is First Vice President, Retail Brokerage in CBRE's Tampa office. CBRE Inc. is a global commercial real estate services and investment firm. So, Paul, how is the commercial real estate market in the Tampa Bay area?
Well, I think it's very good, and I do think that the doctor has landed on something very important. When you look at what has been the growth module in the retail sector, what you have to kind of look at are the things that you just talked about, which is who are they addressing? So when you see that wireless is a very aggressive space user, that's because everybody's on technology. So you cross the board. So there's not an age differential. When you look at convenience, you know, Wawa, Circle K, all these small convenience, they are a factor of people's lifestyles. And that follows through with the dollar store and the grocers. You know, the grocers have gotten this niche business of supplying kind of this experiential retail, and they're going to be a big player in this. So all these things have their lifestyle component. So I think retail is always a reflection of our lifestyle, and it changes. You know, that's why malls are historically changing. It's just not where people want to go and meet. They want to be outside. They want to be entertained. They want to have a multiple experience of eating and being with people and so forth. So I do think that's one of the things we deal with. And I agree 100% actually that this space is going to be well utilized and utilized quickly, I think.
To the point of Toys R Us, I do want to make the point that Toys R Us, especially in the Tampa Bay market, really tried on the experiential side. In 2016, they opened two stores here in Citrus Park and Brandon, where they had Pokemon card trading. They had daily events. They had a magic mirror that, you know, a cartoon would be your reflection. So it was just too little, too late. And they were also straddled by a lot of debt that wasn't necessarily reflective of their real estate or even their shopping experience.
And I think it's complicated. I think, you know, when people make a statement like, well, box stores are not valuable or this type of retail is gone. The truth is they're always morphing. And so you still have boxes like Hobby Lobby coming into the market taking big space. Mm-hmm. They do a good job. In fact, the funny thing is I think social media photographs of people in the flower section. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that you get started that kind of changes retail. So you go to Hobby Lobby to get your picture taken in front of the flowers. You know, that's just not something that used to happen. So I do think a lot of this stuff has its roots in what people are about and how they are seeing it. And not one thing is absolute, especially in retail, because people are so different.
Okay, well, let me ask you, Paul. You say the commercial real estate market in Tampa Bay is doing well. But can we measure the health of retail by how commercial real estate is doing? Because not all commercial real estate is retail, obviously.
Yes, it's a good barometer. I mean, you know, there's a lot of barometers. So one of the barometers is retail confidence in the market is almost at its highest percent. Within 10%, it's the highest level. So the studies tell us people are confident in spending. So that translates to retail, and that translates to operators of retail facilities. And I think, you know, when you see 4% vacancy is all that's left in the market, and that leaves kind of the lowest tier of product, it certainly affects the retail market. Now, just having good real estate doesn't mean retail successful or vice versa. It is a symbiotic relationship because they don't live independently.
Right.
The other thing is you have crossover. There's a lot of business now where it's services. So the Orange Theories, the Anytime Fitness, medicine, healthcare, all those things have now gotten into this community location because
they have a storefront location, you mean?
Because it's a good way to do business. You get a sign, you get parking, you get integration. So, yes, I think the answer is retail is one thing, but servicing your customers as a quote retail profile fits a lot of people.
Ashley.
I do think the retail real estate market here is very healthy because we haven't had the overbuilding this cycle. Developers have been very, very cautious and sticking to those main corridors of 4th Street in downtown St. Pete, the South Tampa, South Del Mabry corridor, where you're seeing rents high enough to justify redevelopment. So I do think it's a very good indicator of the overall strength of the economy here.
Okay. Amazon has been very much in the news lately, and there is a lot of anxiety out there about Amazon. And that's what I want to ask you, Dave. Is Amazon doing in our local, independent, small businesses?
Not necessarily. I think what Amazon's doing, Amazon has built itself as an online business. But Amazon's very smart. And maybe to a point that they're greedy because now they're crossing over and becoming more brick and mortar because they realize from a consumer standpoint, there's 78 million consumers that like to shop online, millennials, but there's another 74 million baby boomers that are used to going into stores. And Amazon is now positioning itself to try to attract some of those 74 million who are getting older.
So, Paul, what do you think about Amazon and the effect that it's having on our local businesses?
Well, I'd rather not speak about Amazon specifically because I think they are one vehicle. But I do think it's an interesting thing. First, you have to step back and say only 10% of retail transactions are in the electronic non-box business.
Okay, so that's surprising.
It is, and that's what everybody loses sight of. And add to that, that half of that business in the electronic transaction business is actually being done by bricks and mortar stores. So only 5% is in this turmoil that you talk about. Now, retailers have their own set of problems. Sears is a good example of that. They have all these things. Radio Shack started with it. They brought in Dell computers and Sprint phones, trying to make their business viable. They couldn't figure it out for some reason. But there are some people stuck in an old mold, and by the time you turn that ship, you've lost sight of the land.
So what you're saying is it's still just a fraction of buying that's happening purely online. People are still going to the store if the store is attractive.
It is a fraction, but it grows exponentially every year. And I think that's why folks are panicking over big box retail, because I know personally there's very little that I don't buy online. Groceries are about it at this point. Even pet stores, which at one point were a driver of retail development, especially here, you can buy all that online, whether it's through Chewy, whether it's through Amazon. So it's just the rate at which it's growing.
This is all about this the social conditions and everybody's situation. Mm-hmm. Now, I think because of electronics, you know, staffing has changed, people's time constraints have changed, people's expectation of what they're allowed to spend their time doing has changed. So they do want to be engaged in the things they're enjoying. And if your satisfaction is paddleboarding, soccer, whatever you do, and you don't want to go grocery shopping or get toilet paper or buy cat food, you do it the easiest way possible and get on with what your life is enjoying. And I think that's a very interesting part of the social change. Shopping used to be a big thing. Like, you see the old stories and pictures in the 50s of women sitting around with bags and having a coffee and talking. Now, I think people still like to go. So we represent Lucky's, full disclosure. And Lucky's has a model where you walk in, and on the first thing on the left-hand side is you can get a $5 beer and 2 slices of pizza. And you put that on your cart, and off you go to shop. Well, that's a unique shopping model. But people are doing it. And what happens is it changes your experience of going there. So you go there not just because you needed, you know, some sliced meat or some olives or whatever. Mm-hmm. You went there because you had a good time. And then if you see somebody you know, all the better.
Is this what we're talking about when we talk about experiential or experience-driven shopping? Is that what we're talking about, Ashley?
Absolutely. I've been to the Lucky's in Sarasota. I've been to a lot of grocery stores. I write frequently about the grocery industry, and Lucky's really does hit it out of the water. Now, I do have to say, is that the experience you want every time you go to the grocery store? There's going to be plenty of times that you just want to run in, grab something, and I think that's why we're seeing stores like even Publix, which at one point built 60,000 square foot stores, building smaller footprints. The people can get in, get out quickly.
And it's interesting, counter to that is that Aldi's, which came in with a small prototype of 12,000 feet, very basic design for effective pricing and convenience, so you don't have 100 of certain items. They've done a great job and now are resizing up because they're getting bigger demand and more. We want more of this. And so it's going both ways.
Dave.
From a supermarket standpoint, I find it quite interesting what Walmart is market testing right now. They've developed in certain markets their smaller neighborhood grocery stores that are just a grocery store. But here's the interesting thing. Checkout is strictly self-checkout. They might have human beings there to help people, but there's no checkout lane where there's a Walmart employee doing the scanning. And it's still in the market test standpoint, but Walmart's afraid of Amazon from a size standpoint. And so they're starting to do things that are kind of different. And again, going back to that large market segment of millennials, what drives them are two things. Technology, because it creates conveniency. And what I'm finding out is that those consumers will try things that they perceive as being cool. That's an operative word today, cool. If they don't see a shopping experience as going to be cool, they won't do it.
Well, and I think the other part of that is every retailer is reaching out electronically somehow. And how well they do that, you know, like once you get their app, you got to have their app, right? You're not shopping without the app because the discounts are there. And so you've got to have an app, and that's got to be compelling. And I think your statement's 100% right. If you get an app and it's boring or doesn't have anything, you diss it. You don't have time for it. And if you use it a couple of times, you know, there's this rote process. Once you start using it, you use it. And so I think that's another thing that people overlook is how well their technology department is working on being cool is kind of important. And a lot of these retailers have done a good job at that.
Yeah, I do a lot of research in the restaurant industry, and I was surprised when I read an article that Applebee's finally have given up trying to attract young people to the store. They spent over $40 million trying to change their landscape to attract young dining consumers. A lot of restaurants have felt they've been forced to do things that they really didn't want to do, like, for example, the to-go, where you can use an app, order your food, you drive up to a special parking spot, someone comes out of the store with the food and they leave and go on. Most restaurants, that's an expensive addition that they've had to develop to compete for traffic.
So Outback has just started one of these down in Tampa, right? Mm-hmm. So this is their new thing, is they've got a freestanding location. It's not a restaurant. It's just an order pickup delivery system, which is going pretty far afield of what they are. And I think that's the question. Can they get in these fields and be successful, right?
What it's going to do is create confusion on what is the image associated with the retailer. And once an image starts to change, it takes time for large groups of people to accept and understand the new image. So the Blooming Onion group might find it a difficult road for the first year, second year, because they're on purpose changing their image of what an Outback has been.
I'm Robin Sessingham, and you're listening to Florida Matters. We're taking a short break. We'll be right back. This is Florida Matters. I'm Robin Sessingham, and we're talking about the way that retail is changing and what it means for the economy of the Tampa Bay region. Here in the studio with us is Ashley Gerbel Kreitzer, a senior reporter with the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Dave Ortenau is a marketing professor at USF's Mumma College of Business, and Paul Rutledge is first vice president retail brokerage in CBRE's Tampa office. CBRE is a global commercial real estate services and investment firm. Ashley, retail is part of the major developments that are going on in Tampa right now, like Water Street, Midtown. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Water Street in particular, when you look at the retail component of that, is going to be fascinating because Water Street, the development by Jeff Vinnick and Bill Gates, Cascade Investment, is they're building for the future. They're building for something that won't fully exist for 10 years from now. And who knows what retail will look like at that point. So they've discussed a lot of local retail, an experience that you can't have online, similar to the Oxford Exchange concept where it's an emporium with a boutique, a bookstore. So it's not going to be your big box. You're not going to see a Target necessarily anchoring Water Street, Tampa, but you are going to see a lot of experiential retail. They do have a grocer space carved out on the bottom of a residential building. So what kind of grocer they can get in there will be fascinating to see how it develops along with the rest of the district, which is just a very, you know, tech forward, forward thinking place.
I thought they put Publix in.
The Publix is actually being built at Twig Street and Meridian. That's a different development. There is a Publix under construction in downtown Tampa. It's also part of a residential development. There is talk that it could be a Publix in the Vinnick Cascade District, but that's certainly not confirmed.
Okay.
You know, I want to follow up on that because I'll tell you one of the things that the Florida Redevelopment Association, which is an association of all the downtown government and support teams that work within the municipalities, has done a lot of research on this. And the thing that you look at as a model, and I think Tampa is a great one. It's just fantastic because it had a great downtown. But the downtown thrived by having a lot of people living there and then utilizing the services. And one of the things that people forget is when you develop a mixed-use or multi-use location, you've got to have people. And I think the dynamics of adding residential first just brings more people. So you have 300 apartment units with 400 people and they have their friends and they said, where are we going to meet? The option to be where you are magnifies that. So the National Multifamily Housing Association says one of the top things people ask when they're renting a place is, where is my retail? Where can I eat, shop, meet my friends? So this, you know, mixed use where you just stick it out someplace, it's difficult. When you have people, it works a lot.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you. The developers of these mixed-use developments, also, they're kind of hedging their bets, right? Because it's not just retail like a mall, like an old-fashioned mall would be where it was just retail. They've got office space. They've got residential. They have a hotel.
Right. They're creating the demand driver. I mean, downtown Tampa is already anchored by the office market. I think you have 60,000 employees down there Monday through Friday. So there's going to be plenty of office space. That's the biggest component in Water Street. And it's also a large part of Midtown. We just saw last week that Midtown will be anchored by Whole Foods Market.
And Midtown, describe where that is and what that is.
Midtown is an unidentified area right now. It's at I-275 and Del Mabry, but they're essentially creating the identity for that part of town. It's not quite West Shore. It's just along that Kennedy-Del Mabry corridor.
Does downtown Tampa have that right mix of retail right now to make a vibrant downtown like you might see in St. Pete or Winter Park or different places where you really have a lot of retail and you see a lot of action and activity?
It's very much in transition. I live in the Channel District, and we've been there since 2014, and it is very much a city in transition. We don't yet have the retail to make it a truly walkable downtown, but first you've got to have the residents. You've got to have the Heads in Beds, or Whole Foods, or Publix is never going to put a location there.
It's not enough just to have the office workers.
Absolutely not. You need the residents. And, you know, right. We are seeing Publix taking that corner in the Channel District, but Publix is known for being very preemptive, and they'll lock down a corner to keep a competitor out. So downtown Tampa is getting there. And you'll see with Water Street and with some of the other developments in the works, Riverwalk Place, we are going to see that street level activity pick up.
So Dave, how does the Tampa Bay market compare with the rest of the country?
I think it's in transition. You know, it's hard to compare to large metro like Chicago or New York. The problem with Tampa has always been that 60,000 office workers, but they live in the suburbs, so you have traffic jams in the morning and in the evening on 275, and they lost a lot of their commercial stuff in the 80s that used to be downtown because they couldn't keep people after work downtown, and Tampa was built horizontally, not vertically.
You're saying that there's not enough dense enough population
exactly.
to support that.
And I think the future of Tampa is figuring out how to attract young professionals. I'm down in Sarasota now that relies on wealthy retirees. The ways of 15 years ago will still work down there. Tampa, though, the future is in young people, and I think that's what Jeff Finnick has seen and what he's doing in the Channel Side area to put in a missing piece that has existed.
Ashley, what are some of these trends that Dave is talking about that are going to drive successful retail?
Well, I think it's a lot of it is service-based. When you talk about mm-hmm. successful retail in a downtown market, you're talking dry cleaners, you're talking a Warby Parker, the eyeglasses, a functional pet store, because there's a lot of people in our downtown that own pets and don't have children. So very service-oriented things that maybe a two-day delivery is not fast enough.
I think that people are discovering there's a way that people aren't buying purely online or purely bricks and mortar, although surprisingly, a lot of people are still in the stores, as we see from the numbers. But how did the storefront retail work with online selling?
Well, it's not necessarily just downtown. You're seeing some big box stores that are really doing that well.
Right.
Target is remodeling a store in Clearwater where they will have one side of it is run in, pick up your online order that you ordered ahead of time is waiting there for you packaged up, maybe pick up a case of beer and get out. And the other entrance is for that traditional Target experience in which you go in and you browse and you buy your cotton balls and your LaCroix and your throw pillows and just any weird thing that catches your attention. And Walmart is a particularly fabulous example of this in this market. They've debuted the pickup mm-hmm. towers, mm-hmm. which are large-scale, almost vending machines, where you've ordered your item online, you've paid, you walk in, you punch in a code, and it comes down the pickup tower, and you take it, and you leave. And of course, Walmart hopes that while you're in there, you'll remember that you need some other item from some other far-reaching corner of the store and buy more while you're in there. But I think you will see some of that in downtown Tampa, too. You'll see the smart retailers will
just
have...
I'm saying the smaller retailers, the independent stores in the region, are they going to have to get into more of this?
It's not as imperative. When you look at the independent retail that has populated Hyde Park Village, you're not necessarily going there because you ordered something online. You are going there because you are going to look around, you're going to buy a popsicle at the Hippo, and you're going to wander in and out of West Elm and Pottery Barn, even though those are big national chains.
But they are going to need, I think, to be on Instagram, right?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. They're going to need to be online somehow, even if it's just social media.
Well, you cannot underestimate the importance of Instagram when it comes to retail, mm-hmm. because it's got to be Instagrammable. Paul made a great point about mm-hmm. people going to Hobby Lobby just to Instagram themselves in front of these floral displays. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of our local retailers, there's a jewelry store in Hyde Park Village, there's a lot of local boutiques in there that do a fantastic job of making themselves relevant online. And you look at it, you scroll through your feed, and you think, oh, I should stop there. And it's not that inconvenient because there's restaurants, there's cocktail bars, there's places to go in addition to those little boutiques. So they need to be clustered around places that also give you a reason to come there.
So go ahead, Paul.
I have a friend who has a small store in Winter Park. And Winter Park, obviously, is one of the mm-hmm. better downtown. It's successful. It's got good income. Mm-hmm. And it was started in the 1920s, by the way, so it didn't happen overnight. But they had a blouse they had in their store. And they put it on Instagram with the price. And before they got in the morning, they'd sold 15 units. And that's the kind of thing where you use it correctly that a small retailer expands and becomes international, because once you're on Instagram, everybody can see it and they can order it from anywhere. They don't have to even be in Winter Park. But if you have a cachet name and you have a cool little venue and you're in Winter Park, or you say you're in Hyde Park. Hyde Park, I worked on Hyde Park a number of years ago when it very first started, and it's got some cachet. You can mm-hmm. use that and get that kind of interesting shopper.
But in that example, and when you're selling online like that, it complicates their supply chain logistics immensely, yes. doesn't it?
You know, this is where you have to have a skilled owner. In other words, this even if you do a great job selling a lot of stuff and you can't deliver, that gets out too. And so I think one of the things people have to do is you have to be an executor as well as a creator.
So, Paul, what's next for retail? What are stores going to have to do to succeed?
I think it is watch people. I think that's the fun thing about retail. As people change mm-hmm. and younger mm-hmm. people come on and they have different mm-hmm. interests and desires, you know, that's the dynamics. Office space has been office space a pretty long time. The point about retail is every time someone has a creative idea, it's exercised in some way on the street. And we can go in and enjoy it. Like you mm-hmm. said, a hippo, the ice cream. I was there and had a, by the way, I recommend mango ginger. And it's one of a kind. So I've mm-hmm. never had a mango ginger mm-hmm. popsicle, and it was fantastic. And it was in Hyde Park, and that added to it. That's retail.
Ashley, I want to ask you the same question. What's next?
Well, let me get out my crystal ball,
yes. And
we will decide. You know, I think that we just have to give people a reason to go to the physical store, and those reasons decline every year unless it is a unique experience. And I know personally when I'm looking at, you know, online shopping, I can search and sort. So I walk into a physical store and I mentally want to search and sort, and you can't necessarily do that. So I think that the brick and mortar folks need to get better at mimicking the convenience and the anticipation that online shopping offers.
Dave.
I agree with Ashley. It's businesses have to understand what are the drivers at the retail level. And as time goes on, this term that I've used before, convenience, it's a time convenience, it's a easiness of doing something, and price will be two driving forces. And as long as certain sets of consumers see the experience as being unique or cool. I can't overemphasize this term cool. It's unbelievable on how that's becoming part of the dialogue of consumers, that without those drivers, retailers are going to struggle to get foot traffic.
And I predict that the pendulum's going to swing the other way, and it's going to become cool to spend time with human beings, like at Oxford Exchange, and maybe put down the phone.
Starbucks has done that. I mean, mm-hmm. they've done a great job at that. And I think you always have to remember the human condition is not isolation. You know, the human condition is together.
Paul Rutledge is First Vice President, Retail Brokerage in CBRE's Tampa office. Dave Ortenau is Marketing Professor at USF's Mumma College of Business. And Ashley Gerbel-Kreitzer, a Senior Reporter with the Tampa Bay Business Journal. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And we always want to hear from you. And there are lots of ways to reach us. You can tweet us at Florida Matters or leave us a comment on WUSF's Facebook page. You'll hear more of this conversation on our podcast, Florida Matters More. You'll find a link to subscribe on the website, WUSF.org. Florida Matters is a production of WUSF Public Media. The engineer is Richard Jimenez. The producer is Stephanie Colombini. I'm Robin Sessingham. Thanks for listening.